This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the go-to lunchbox items for many parents, Polony and Vienna sausages, have been recalled in South Africa. The country's health department is advising people to avoid all processed meat products until further notice.
That's reporter Nadia Same in Johannesburg. We'll have full details coming up.
Also, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga met today in an apparent effort to settle months of violent post-election tension. And according to observers, none of the presidential candidates in Sierra Leone will have enough votes to reach the 55% threshold required to be declared winner.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga met today in an apparent effort to settle months of violent post-election tensions. The meeting came just hours before a visit by U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. VOA's Daniel Scherf reports from Nairobi.
In a surprise meeting Friday, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga agreed to work toward unifying the country after last year's divisive presidential election. The two Kenyan leaders, who spoke separately after the talks and did not take questions, acknowledged the country was heading in the wrong direction. Odinga, who has refused to recognize Kenyatta as president, paraphrased U.S. President Abraham Lincoln. He said Kenya needed to know where they are and where they want to go before they can better judge what to do and how to do it.
54 years into independence, we are challenged to audit our progress towards the ideals for which our fathers fought to establish a free and independent country, and for which many of our compatriots died.
As leaders, said Odinga, they had a duty to reflect on their performance in reaching Kenya's goals since independence: justice, unity, peace, liberty, and prosperity for all. President Uhuru Kenyatta said the two men came to a common understanding that for Kenya to come together, its leaders must come together.
And this is what me and my brother have agreed, that starting today, we will begin a process of bringing our people together, that we will begin a process of discussing what ails us and what creates division amongst us.
On the streets of Nairobi, Kenyans also welcomed the leaders agreeing to work together.
It's a really good step towards harmonizing the country because the electioneering period has left us divided across the divide. Supporters of both sides, so I think it's a really good idea that they've met, and hopefully you can progress from this.
If they resolve their issues, well, that is a good thing, because we need to move forward, and as a country, well, you know, the economy has been down, so if they resolve their issues, well, at least it will show that we are moving forward, and the issue to do with the election, it is behind us.
Kenya was plunged into political crisis after the Supreme Court annulled the August election due to irregularities, and Odinga and his supporters boycotted a second round in October. Odinga refused to recognize Kenyatta's win, and in January held a rally where his supporters symbolically inaugurated the opposition leader as president. Observers feared further division would follow the provocative action and the government's crackdown on independent television and the opposition. Friday's breakthrough came just hours before U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is, for the first time, to visit Kenya. Not a coincidence, says independent political analyst Martin Andati.
The meeting must have been come out of pressure from the U.S. Secretary of State, who is expected here anytime. You know, the West has been very keen on trying to get Uhuru and Raila to meet. Two, it helps ease the political tensions, because the political tensions have been very high.
While Andati says the agreement on unification is significant for healing Kenyan politics, the devil will be in the details. We need to understand what exactly has been agreed upon, he said, noting the Kenyan leader's statements contained only generalities. Daniel Scherf, VOA News, Nairobi.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson in Nairobi has praised Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta and main opposition leader Raila Odinga for announcing they will pursue reconciliation. Their announcement raises hopes for easing Kenya's political tensions, which have been running high since last year's contentious presidential election. During a news conference after arriving in Nairobi, Tillerson called it a very positive step and said both men showed great leadership in coming together. Despite the promising development, the global spotlight for Tillerson's five-nation African trip has shifted to news that President Donald Trump has agreed to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un before May. The surprise announcement comes after months of increasing hostile rhetoric between the two leaders over North Korea's nuclear weapons and missile programs. Tillerson said yesterday that the conditions weren't right for negotiations with the North, although the administration was open to having talks at some point.
Sierra Leone's Electoral Commission today plans to release the results of the first 25% of votes counted from Wednesday's general election. The announcement came as local radio and television stations released unconfirmed results from polling stations across the country. The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, which monitored the elections, is calling on the Electoral Commission to step up efforts to announce the results. At a news conference in the capital, Freetown, the ECOWAS monitors also congratulated Sierra Leoneans for voting peacefully. Marcella Samba-Sese, executive director of a prominent Sierra Leonean group of observers, National Elections Watch, says her organization's analysis shows there will likely be a presidential runoff. That's because, in her view, none of the presidential candidates will have enough votes to reach the 55% threshold required to be declared winner.
Listeria has killed 180 people in South Africa. The World Health Organization calls the outbreak the worst in global history. The National Health Department has identified the source as polony, a widely consumed ready-to-eat product made by meat giant Enterprise Foods. All of the company's processed products have been pulled from shelves in South Africa and several other countries. The outbreak has sparked panic among parents and schools, many of which serve polony and Vienna sausages to children as part of their lunch offerings. From Johannesburg, Nadia Same has the story.
The go-to lunchbox items for many parents, polony and Vienna sausages, have been recalled in South Africa. The country's health department is advising people to avoid all processed meat products until further notice. Listeria is a bacteria found in soil and can end up in vegetables and uncooked meat. It causes fevers, muscle aches, nausea, and sometimes a nervous system infection. Over 1,000 cases have been confirmed in the country, and the death toll stands at 180. Parents are scrambling to find alternatives. Sally Chait runs a nursery school in Johannesburg's northern suburbs that, like many other schools, served the popular meat products.
I must admit we were a bit shocked. We didn't realize that was where it was coming from. How did it happen? So our immediate reaction was, okay, at least it got to the source of where it is. And how are we going to deal with this? What are we going to do?
Chait immediately put the alert to parents, cautioning against putting the recalled products in snack boxes.
We see a tremendous amount of it, the little Vienna sausages and all that sort of thing that the parents seem to like to put into their polony sandwiches, literally chunks of polony that are put in certain children's lunch boxes. That was our concern, and that was immediate where we needed to cut that.
Some parents are turning to cheese, jam, or peanut butter as replacements. Low-income earners are hardest hit. Portia Tupé is a domestic worker and mother of two. She's struggling to find a new sandwich filler.
I'm on budget, and when I buy things, I buy the basic, and I buy once. On Monday, I made a breakfast for my son and lunch. Then at school, he had a polony, then he couldn't finish it. They sent him to sick bay because he wasn't feeling okay. When I arrived here at work, my boss told me that Tekka Brands product is not well, then when I arrive home, I check that it's a Tego bread product, then I have to substitute the paloni with the jam and peanut butter to put on his sandwich, and he's not liking it.
Principal Chait has resolved to permanently exclude all processed meat products from her school's menu.
But I buy in bulk on a monthly basis from Macro, and I would choose something that was nice to go with the main ingredients, which was your vegetables, which was a potato salad and grated carrots and apple. So we would choose a protein to go with it. So we either decided on hard-boiled eggs, which is a lovely form of protein for them, or we move the winter menu in, which is a vegetable soup. We do a thick vegetable soup with brown bread.
The listeria outbreak also hurt small informal businesses that sell food on township streets. Their main ingredients are the now banned paloni and Vienna sausages. The traders say their customers are not fond of proposed vegetarian alternatives, meaning business is taking a dip. For VOA News, I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg.
The United Nations warns more than 2 million severely acutely malnourished children in the DRC are at risk of dying unless they receive urgently needed therapeutic aid. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Years of violence and unrest in Democratic Republic of Congo have displaced more than 4.5 million people, creating widespread poverty and hunger. The United Nations refers to the DRC as one of the world's most complex humanitarian crises. It says this catastrophic situation has worsened in recent months because of an uptick in fighting in many parts of the country, causing more people to flee their homes and more people to sell everything they own to feed themselves. UN aid agencies are on the ground ready to aid millions of people in desperate need of humanitarian assistance, but they say they lack the funds to help them. For instance, the UN Migration Agency says its $75 million appeal for DRC has received only $4.7 million. Spokeswoman Olivia Hayden tells VOA that if IOM had more money, it could provide many of the internally displaced with emergency shelters.
We'd be able to help people build homes to be able to live in and be safe from the elements. We're also doing a lot of work with women in the DRC. I think in the last couple of months we've helped about 70 women, or we currently have 70 women who have survivors of sexual assaults and have fistulas as a result. So we do medical support as well.
The United Nations reports children are suffering most from the fighting, instability, lack of food, medical care, and other support. Earlier this year, the United Nations launched its largest appeal ever for the DRC. It asked for $1.68 billion to assist 10.5 million people. So far, it only has received about 5% of that amount. Aid officials say generous contributions from donors could save the lives of more than 2 million children who are at risk of dying because they are unable to get the treatment they need. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Eighteen past the hour, you are listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Often called the world's oldest profession, prostitution is found in every country in the world. However, most sex work, especially prostitution, is illegal or tightly controlled. Advocates for sex workers say that often leads to violence and other abuse, usually against women. Sex workers also usually are denied even the most basic labor protections. But now, sex workers and their allies are organizing for change. As part of our International Women's Day coverage this week, VOA's Adam Phillips takes a look at the effort to protect sex workers.
The weather was cold last Sunday, but it was plenty steamy inside the Sex Workers Festival of Resistance at PS1, a branch annex of New York's Museum of Modern Art. That's where perhaps 400 sex workers, sex worker advocates, and supportive onlookers gathered to celebrate and organize.
Many people focus on the sex part of sex work rather than the work part of sex work.
RJ Thompson is a lawyer with the Sex Workers Project at the Urban Justice Center in Manhattan. Thompson also happens to be a gay sex escort and porn star, both for the fun of it and the extra cash. He says many people wrongly assume that sex workers are trafficking victims.
We oppose human trafficking, of course, as a gross violation of human rights in all cases, and we work with survivors of human trafficking all the time. But someone who engages in sex work by choice or circumstance who has never experienced trafficking has certain rights as a worker that should be protected. They have a right to be safe in their work environment, to set their own boundaries with clients, to be paid what they are entitled to be paid for their time and labor.
Although both men and women engage in sex work, prostitution has a female face, says Melissa Brudo, an attorney and human rights activist who co-directs the Sharmus Outlaw Rights and Advocacy Institute.
Because it's around sex and because it is often around female sexuality, it's completely devalued. Because women are devalued, and in American society, in a lot of societies, we are very confused about sex and sexuality and its place, and who should or shouldn't be having sex, and in what context, in what way. And so I think we are extremely preoccupied with regulating that and with regulating women's bodies.
Berklee College sociologist Heidi Hofinger, who studies sex work worldwide, says even feminists are divided in their views of sex work. So-called abolitionist feminists believe that both female prostitution and pornography are inherently violent against women and must never be treated as normal.
Versus more sex worker rights types of feminists, more progressive feminists who argue that this is actually a way women can use to end their poverty. So in that sense, it can be viewed as a form of empowerment. It's a job that comes with ups and downs like many other jobs. But for women in particular, it can be used as a tool and as a strategy to better their lives.
M.F. Aquinos, the founder of the Black Sex Workers Collective, is a case in point. Today, she's a stripper and performance artist. But Aquinos began her career as an escort after several romantic disappointments with men.
I never expected to become an escort. I got tired of being mistreated. And I knew also that I hated corporate America. So I just decided to take matters in my own hand. I figured if I'm going to have sex and be giving someone my time, I might as well get paid for it. And so I did.
Just before taking the festival stage, Aquinos looks happy to be joining her community. And with growing sex worker rights groups in North and South America, Europe, Asia, and Africa, that community is now worldwide. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 23 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga met today in an apparent effort to settle months of violent post-election tensions. According to observers, none of the presidential candidates in Sierra Leone will have enough votes to reach the 55% threshold required to be declared the winner. And listeria has killed 180 people in South Africa. The World Health Organization calls the outbreak the worst in global history. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Over the past few years, rebel groups from several African nations have moved into southern Libya, taking advantage of the lack of government control to shelter from their own governments. But the Libyan National Army, headed by General Khalifa Haftar, is giving those militias 9 days to leave or face military action. The Libyan National Army also has called upon neighboring African states not to push rebels into Libya or use them to destabilize the volatile south. In recent days, there are heavy clashes among armed African groups in the southwestern city of Sabah. Libyan political analyst Ibrahim Haiba spoke to VOA's Mohamed El-Shanawi about the different African militias operating in southern Libya and the threats they pose.
Most of them, they are opposition army, north of Chad, north of Niger, north of Sudan, north of Mali, and south of Algeria. Those African armed militia found a good opportunity now to immigrate in Libya because there are some pressure from the government of Chad, the government of Niger, government of Sudan, government of Mali, government of Algeria. So they found it's very good opportunity for them to move into Libya and reorganize themselves there. And unfortunately, the government of those sub-Sahara countries find this is really also very good opportunity for them to get rid of those armed militia and the armed opposition and send them to Libya in order to stabilize the region at the expense of the Libyan country. And they are engaging in the conflict in Libya. And not only the armed militia, but in fact, some tribal and or their tribal also moved to Libya in the south and building their bases there. And there are also some news that there are some terrorist group, or they might cooperate with other terrorist groups.
Are these militias working also in organized crimes like trafficking of drugs and immigrants?
Yes, basically they rely mostly in the human traffic and woven black market and dealing with terrorists and trying to use the border in order to empower themselves and try to organize themselves. So basically they are controlling most of the south right now.
So who is preventing these African militias from controlling southern Libya?
Basically, the Libyan people or the tribal of the Libyan people, they're trying to fight them. But unfortunately, the Libyan tribe are very weak. They are not getting support from the Libyan government. And the people are just fighting them and try to contain them. Basically, they are not able, honestly, to fight those groups because those are well-armed and well-training. Mr. Haftar sent a small group of Libyan army there to assist the Libyan to contain the situation. But unfortunately, both African armed militia and armed opposition have dealt with many militia, Libyan militia in different parts of the region. And they have been recruited by many armed militia and different political parties in Libya. So the situation is very bad in the south.
There were news reports about Libyan families abandoning their homes in Sabha. Would the presence of African militias in the south threaten the demographic composition of Libyan population there?
Certainly, there are signs that a lot of Libyan family moved to Tripoli or moved to the north because they are not able to provide security for themselves and for their family.
That was Libyan political analyst Ibrahim Haiba. He spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wahib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clottey, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.